Wait for it.
There's no need to wait, geeks. We are back. This is the Active Geek Podcast with your hosts, Jim and Chuck. And Chuck, last week I said, we'll be back. But we have no idea when we'll be back. And here we are. Our schedule's finally aligned like the stars in the sky. And we've got a jam-packed DC-centric episode again. Kept saying, all summer, no more DC, no more DC. And then they just keep putting out content, which is great. So we've got a jam-packed episode, like I said, but the gist of this is we're going to be talking about DC fandom, which happened about a week ago today as we record this on Saturday, as well as breaking down both parts of the Long Halloween animated movies that are on HBO Max, which was a gift. I don't think there's been a time where we've been able to get DC animated stuff without purchasing it on demand. So that was a gift. We'll talk about that towards the end. But let's start heavy in the trailer park. The biggest trailer from last week, The Batman. A trailer that a few weeks ago I said I really didn't want to see because I don't want them to give it away, give too much away. And I think that's what Warner Brothers does. We've seen that with Batman vs. Superman, Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman 84, Justice League. We've seen all this. But I'm a glutton for punishment. And I watched it five or six times. But I want to hear your thoughts because last year we went crazy for DC fandom. We sat together in my apartment. We watched everything. We posted on everything. This year's kind of feel a little bloated. A lot of stuff that was a little unnecessary, mainly, you know, all the CW stuff. But what did you think of the Batman trailer?
I loved it. You know, from the beginning of they're making the Batman and particularly with Robert Pattinson, I was like, oh, you know, what the hell? Like, you know, I don't think anyone had him on the radar to be Batman. But they put a really good cast around him, and Matt Reeves is a really good director. So, you know, a lot of things are on the up and up for that. And then, you know, the first trailer came out. It was good. The second trailer, I was blown away. I love the tone. I love the villains. I wouldn't say I love Batman, but I love his look.
Okay.
And his voice surprised me. He normally doesn't do an American accent, so it was different to see. I thought it was good. I love the Penguin.
Oh, he's not quite the Penguin yet. He's just Oz in this one.
Oswald Cobblepot. But he looked great. He sounded great. I can't even tell it's coming from.
Not at all.
Between the voice and the face. And we saw a lot of Selina Kyle. Not a lot, but more Selina Kyle than we did before.
Yeah. I mean, this might as well just be a Halle Berry Catwoman review because we're going to be talking about Selina Kyle a lot in this episode. Mainly from, you know, this trailer to I have a pick of the week that stars Catwoman. We've got Long Halloween. But it's ironic, right, that we're doing this episode where it's the Long Halloween and the Batman trailer drops the week before, because what we were told and what we were kind of fed through the media outlets, and we kind of, you know, are guilty of this as well, we ran with the rumors that they were going to take a lot of inspiration from the Long Halloween. And we saw, you know, the Penguin was announced and we were like, yes, this is going to be awesome. That means, you know, there's a possibility for the Joker. Catwoman plays a huge role in the Long Halloween. So we're like, oh my God, this is going to be great. After reading the Long Halloween and watching the Long Halloween and seeing this trailer, I'm like, no. That was complete, you know, wild goose hunt that we were on. This is kind of what you and I have been hoping for with the reintroduction of Batman into this DC universe, although we have three currently, and we'll talk about the other two in a bit. But what we're seeing here is that year one, year two Batman, where it's not quite Batman Begins, so we're not going to see, we may see a little bit of like flashbacks of training, but we're seeing a young, angry billionaire who wants to fight for his city and who really doesn't care about his well-being, his body, his mind, his spirit. He doesn't care. He's violent. He's vengeance. He's learning. And I think that that's what's really cool about this, because we really don't get a movie where the hero is learning on the job. You know, we do get these origin stories and like there's flashes where they're like, well, this kind of works, but it's usually just like, boom, everything clicks. I feel like this one's going to be long. It's going to be drawn out where it's like, he's human and he's just learning how to fight. And he's learning that like, there's skeleton gangs. There's this fat weirdo in a car that has like a helium voice that's going to be mad at me. There's this hot girl in a cat suit that, you know, I'm kind of into. Now there's this weirdo who's all wrapped up, leaving question marks in his coffee like he works at Starbucks. You know, there's a lot going on. And he's just angry that Gotham's falling apart, that his parents are dead. I'm sure we'll see his parents getting killed. But
do we need to see
that? No, but it's Batman, so we're going to see it. And it'll probably allude to him wanting to take in foster sons. It's Batman. But overall, with this trailer, I really liked it. I hope to God they don't release a third one. I know they will because it comes out next year. So we'll see more of this. The one thing that I'm on the fence with, because I am a traditionalist, is Edward Nygma's look. But the way I look at it is, if you go straight out the gate, Jim Carrey, you're going too whimsical, too goofy. If you are aligning all your heroes with the year one, year two kind of deal, and all, your villain should align that way too. So I think that that's really cool that they went like more, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming with the villain costume. Very homemade, very weird, very unrecognizable, but I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with this is it's probably the grittiest Batman we'll ever seen, you know. We said that about Bale, but
Clooney was the grittiest, let's be honest.
But like, so, you know, having a guy running around in a green suit doesn't match the universe. You know, Penguin is, or Oswald, is a very grounded and has always pretty much been a grounded character. Catwoman, easy. But having the Riddler, like, you're not going to have a guy run around, like, in a green leotard. Yeah. It just, it doesn't fit. The Riddler for this fits.
Yeah, they made the right choices with villains, because they did go very yes. grounded. You know, Riddler's a little over the top. We get that. Penguin will get over the top once Oswald turns into the Penguin. But they did go grounded. You know, up and coming, you know, quote-unquote mob boss, school shooter, serial killer, depending on how young they want to keep Edward in this with Paul Dano, and then a jewel thief. I think they didn't like stack the deck and go, oh, well, let's give him a half man, half bat hybrid. Let's give him, you know, a giant Mexican luchador pumped up on Venom. And let's give him, you know, what else is really good? Oh, a psychotic clown that kills everybody. Let's give him all these guys, like, right out the gate, because then that would have been, I mean, that's a very Warner Brother move. But it would have set Pattinson, Matt Reeves, would have set everybody up for failure. And I think they did it right. But let's go to our next one, because, again, we got a jam-packed episode. This is going to be called episode whatever number this is, jam-packed, because fandom happens, right? And we always get a wonderful look at our buddy, Ezra Miller. And he popped up in his, you know, he looked like he had just got done filming a scene from the remake of Ghost, and he's talking about, you know, how him and Andy Muschietti and the rest of the cast of The Flash are looking to bring Barry Allen and Central City to the masses, and how excited he is, and that's all well and good. And I was like, is this where it's going to end? And they're like, nope, here's some footage. And man, that footage looks good. That footage looks really good. The tease with Batman at the end was something I think everybody was hoping for. I was reading a bunch of tweets and, you know, articles about it, and they're like, we don't know which Batman it is. We absolutely know which Batman it is. That's Michael Keaton. You can tell by the ears on the helmet, on the cowl.
Yeah.
There's no...
You can tell by the cowl. You can tell, obviously, at the end with the Batmobile. Yeah, you didn't see it, but come on. Yeah, you know what it was.
They're like, is it Ben Affleck? No, it's old man Michael Keaton. That's who it's going to be. What did you think of the first look at The Flash? We'll go kind of lightning rounds for these next first looks, because there are so many of them.
The introduction was really weird, of Ezra Miller, but the trailer surprised me. I do like Andy Muschietti. He's put out some decent movies. He's never done anything like this. He's always, you know, between Mama and the It movies. So this was completely different from what I've seen him do. And it looks great. We saw two versions of Barry Allen.
Yep.
And we saw Supergirl.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. And in the Batcave. So it looked neat. They didn't show a whole lot, which I really liked. Obviously, like you said, they showed Michael Keaton, and that was what I was there for. I want to see how they were going to incorporate him. I want to see what they do. Obviously, he was in the Batcave, and I did read the same thing you did with people. Like, who was it? No. One, you could tell it was his voice. Two, it's the cowl.
Yeah.
Like, he had the very pointy, long ears on the cowl and the Batmobile. That was... To me, that was a given. That was easy.
Yeah, well, to multimedia, it was not, which is a lot of fun. And, like, what says Flashpoint movie with Al Batman showing up? You know, he just is always around with dead parents. Yeah, we know Nora's going to die, obviously. So who better to pop in and say, listen, kid, I know what you're going through, than Bruce Wayne. But, yeah, it looks good. It looks promising. The big thing for me is, where does this fit? What does this mean for the universe that we have? Because we've already talked two trailers, and they're both set at different time periods. So it's going to get weirder, because we've got Black Adam, where, again, we don't really know what time period it's going to be set in. We don't know if this is part of the Shazam universe. But we got a first look at Black Adam. Just the highlights for me. The costume reveals look pretty good. The Thangarian armor looks great. Black Adam looks... I mean, The Rock looks great in his costume. Like, it's a perfect fit. Like, this is their perfect casting for a character. And I don't think that they've had many. And I'm talking about DC. And then it looks like it's going to be violent and gritty and everything that you like in a superhero movie.
Yeah.
So what were some of your highlights from the Black Adam first look?
The tone. Definitely more violent than we do see. Stuff from DC, especially if it's set in this quote-unquote DCEU. Like you said, the suit looked good. I was wondering if they were going to give him hair. You know, the awful widow's peak that Black Adam has in the comics. And they didn't, which I'm kind of glad they didn't. Because I was like, oh, they're not going to give The Rock hair. Like, when's the last time we saw him with hair? It was like the Central Intelligence with friggin'...
Oh, God. What's Steve Carell.
No. With Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart.
Yeah, where he had a fanny pack and a unicorn shirt.
Yeah. But I really liked the tone. You know, they didn't... I liked that it was just like a little scissor reel. It wasn't actually a trailer. Because, again... Like you said, they're probably going to do a trailer in a couple months, and it's going to show everything.
Yeah.
I wish we saw a little glimpse of the actual other characters. We seen like a little highlight of, like, not so much their suit, but, you know, their logo or whatever. You can see, you know, you saw Atom Smasher and Hawkeye and Cyclone and Dr. Fate, but we didn't get to see an actual look of how they look. And that's what I was kind of hoping for.
We did see Pierce Brosnan with the Helm of Fate. We saw his helmet.
Yeah, but I wanted a full body look. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I mean, it's a kid's show. They can't give you full body right out the gate. They got to put a parental warning in front of it, my friend. But yeah, it looked good. This, you know, when he electrocutes the guy to ashes, I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, that was pretty
very
cool.
Again, don't know where this fits, just like I don't know where this next one fits. And that's everybody's favorite superhero, Peacemaker. Even the janitor at the hospital doesn't know who he is. But John Cena's got a series. We knew this. We watched Suicide Squad. If you didn't watch Suicide Squad, I'm sorry, we ruined it. He's in the hospital. Now he's going to save the world. A couple highlights. Vigilante looks great. His costume looks great. It kind of reminds me, like, this is going to be in line with the Harley Quinn animated series a little bit, where it's like it's going to be kind of campy, overkill. Looked like it had some dark moments when we see Peacemaker's dad, Augie, But the main thing, besides another John Cena,
I know what you're
underwear
say.
Montage, is
that's not what I thought you.
No,
were
it is
say.
Eagly. I mean, come on now, like that is the best thing that I didn't know I wanted in a comic book series. When he ends it and he's like, "Oh my God, it's happening!" He's hugging me. Dad, get my camera. I was like, that's me. That's me. That's just a big, giant douchebag version of me being hugged by a bald eagle. It's completely James Gunn. It's completely perfect for John Cena. They put, again, a very good cast of people around him. Vigilante might be one of the highlights of this show. But I want to know where you sit with this.
I'm excited for it. It looks like a lot of fun. Like, it looks like every episode you're just going to sit back and enjoy it, because it is campy. It is goofy. And John Cena is perfect for Peacemaker.
Yep. Yeah, and it's coming out in January. So it's the first thing out of everything that we've reviewed or kind of broken down that is coming out. So looking forward to it. It's going to be on HBO Max, which is great because I could just lay at home and watch it. So we'll maybe we'll have an after show called Keeping the Peace with Peacemaker. You know, TM right there. But let's move on to...
That'd be fun.
Yeah, it would be great. If it were video, I'd probably wear like Hanes, like tighty whiteys and talk about it with like a tinfoil helmet. But, you know, again, kids show. Let's go to the newsroom. And by newsroom, we're just going to react to some more first looks, but albeit more pictures than anything. We saw a first look at Leslie Grace as Batgirl. Well, as more of concept art for these first two. There's not much to say. You really can't mess up a Batgirl costume. And it was a very far away Norman Rockwell-esque painting of Gotham City with Leslie Grace just sitting on a ledge with her suit on. So, I mean, we don't have to really dive into that. But what I really put in this section for the newsroom was we got a first look at Sholo Maragueña's concept art for his Blue Beetle suit. And the word that stuck out for me was epic. You're a Blue Beetle guy. I want to know where you sit with it. So tell me about it.
It looks so good. You know, concept art isn't always what they're going to go with, but you have an idea of what they want to do, and it looks perfect.
Yeah, and that's something that gets kind of dicey, right? When it's like, oh, this is a character that not a lot of people know, so maybe we can kind of mess around with the costume and give it our own little flavor, our own little flair. I'm so glad they didn't do it with this one, because albeit not a character a lot of people know, it's a iconic costume and armor for tier one active geeks. And they really, really, you know, hit their mark with this one. It looks so good.
Yeah. And I told you the one thing I was excited for, he was in front of the Court Industry building.
Yes.
So that pretty much confirms that Ted Kord will be in it.
Yeah, you can't have Jaime without Ted. Like, there's no way.
But it's DC, so you never know. I've been dying for the casting, and you know my pick. I want Matthew McConaughey as Ted Kord. And I think that would be perfect.
I'm telling you, it's going to be Billy Zabka. Just going to be it's Cobra Kai in an alternate universe. Be like, listen, this is what I taught you, Miguel. Now go out there and use your super suit. And, you know, Sholo will say, you know, you can't call me that, Johnny. You're Ted, I'm Jaime. That's our new names in this realm. And that you've got yourself a movie.
I mean, that would be awful.
It's a fever dream, Chuck. It's a fever dream.
But Matthew McConaughey, like, Ted Kord is an eccentric, cocky billionaire. I don't think Matthew McConaughey has to act too much.
Well, yeah, you're right. He needs to act like he has $1 billion, but...
No.
I can't wait for it to be Dane DeHaan and you just be ruined. But we'll see.
It's gonna be Billy Zane.
No, it's not going to be Billy Zane. And we'll go to our first looks at two movies, two sequels.
Mm-hmm.
that we're both pretty excited for. We liked the first one, so that is Shazam, Fury of the Gods, and Aquaman. We get to see Helen Mirren, and we get to see Lucy Liu as their villainess characters from Shazam, Fury of the Gods. We didn't see Sinbad, a little upset about that.
No.
But what we did get was first look at costumes, new costumes. We got the first look at our new Mary Marvel, because they recasted her. And we got a confirmation that we're getting harpies and, you know, mythological creatures and bigger landscapes. So with all those reveals, what where do you sit with this Shazam Fury of the Gods sequel?
Well, the first one surprised me. I really enjoyed that one. It's actually one of my top of the DCE movies because it was a lot of fun. So when they said it was a sequel, I was excited. You know, the cast is great. Having two villainous women is awesome. But I'm excited about the mythical creatures. See, like, minotaurs and, you know, stuff like that I think is really cool and very different to see in a superhero movie.
Yeah. I like that they're expanding the universe and not keeping it in Philadelphia. Although, you know, love Philadelphia. It's our home away from home. But when you look at these DC movies, they're usually just centric in one city. Metropolis, Gotham, Central City, Star City, you know, wherever you go. I like that Shazam is existing throughout the world and throughout time, it seems, because they're going to, you know, the Rock of Eternity. They're going to the home of the gods, the Library of Eternity. Like, they're really just what it seems like. Is they're setting this up for Black Adam.
And they're
expanding this universe, and that Kandak is going to be another stop on the trip.
Well, the great thing that they did is, you know, for once, they didn't throw everything at you all at once. Like, Shazam is Black Adam's villain. Like, that's like Batman and Joker, and instead of throwing it all at once, they're slowly getting to it. So it'll probably be either Shazam 3 or Black Adam 2, which is great. You just don't want to throw them in all at once. So I like where they're going with this.
Yeah, it's a smart move, but who knows? Again, where does this fit in the timeline? Their Superman is Henry Cavill. And we don't know much about Henry Cavill other than the fact that Superman exists in the Eternals universe. So that's very cool. Aquaman.
Yeah.
We get a first look at a few things. We get a better look at Black Manta, where it looked like an Alex Ross painting, how good that suit looks. But the big thing is giant grasshoppers, and I mean big. James Wan, not afraid to do fantasy.
No.
And I don't know where this is going to fit. We get giant grasshoppers. We get desert creatures, sand creatures, a little bit of Dune, which we're going to be reviewing this upcoming episode. But I want to see footage before I, you know, hang my hopes on this second one, because I know about sequel syndrome, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this, and my feelers are going up that they're going to get a little too big for their britches on this sequel, and I hope that that's not the case. But what do you think so far?
It looks good. You know, went back to Shazam. Like, Aquaman was my favorite DCEU movie. I thought it was great, even though I bashed it before it came out. So I'm excited to see this. I think it looks great. I like all the returning players. And, you know, it just looks bigger and better. So I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to this for sure. Like, I like the first one a lot. I'm worried a little bit because it is Aquaman and because it's DC. Had this been Marvel, they would have got it right and said, like, let's keep the same tone. But DC's like, oh, Jason Momoa, he's in everything. He's in Dune. Let's make sand creatures. Let's, you know, let's do this. Let's do that. Have you watched our cartoon on HBO Max? Let's make it seem like that. I watched 5 minutes of that, by the way, and I turned it off. I couldn't even get past the credits.
You're,
I was like, this is
you're
pure
a glutton
dog
for
shit.
Punishment. Like, when they did the first reveal with Flora Borg, I love him, and I was just like, okay, I'll just look at it, and I'm mad that I watched that minute and a half clip.
Well, I put it on for my clients while they ate breakfast before we went into, you know, therapy.
And they probably loved it.
No, they were like, turn this off. And I was like, you're absolutely right. But We'll see. That's our DC fandom recap. It could have been a whole episode, but we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, and part of that is my picks of the week, Chuck. And this is for this past Wednesday from this week, wherever we review the release this. So there's a few out. I think I've read all of these, to be honest with you. And the first one, I have a lot from Image. Three, I think. The first one is called Ant, and it's written and drawn by Eric Larson. And if you know Eric Larson, that name probably rings a bell. He is the creator of Savage Dragon. So a great, great character over at Image. So Ant, who is she and how she came to be? Eric Larson takes on a whole new wall crawler. Ant's epic adventure kicks off with this all-new origin issue, a new ongoing title by Eric Larson. That's it. They don't give you anything with this one. They're not like DC where they're like, here's 85 paragraphs. They're like, pick up this book. It's from Eric Larson. In the preview itself, they give you Eric Larson's name four times. Written, drawn, Eric Larson takes a whole new spin, and it's an ongoing title from Eric Larson. So pick up this book. I read it. It's fun. It's definitely different. And you get the full origin story in this first issue, which is great. The next one is one I know that you're going to pick up, and it is called Gunslinger Spawn.
Yeah.
It's written by Todd McFarlane and Alice Cott, with art from Philip Tan and Kevin Keane, introducing the launch of a second new monthly title spinning out of the Spawn universe with one of the most popular characters in the entire Spawn mythology. This book contains three separate Gunslinger stories, each taking a look at his journey through time, from the Wild Wild West to the 21st century. Will his 200-year-old past come back to haunt him as he navigates the strange world of 2021, yet ready for the past and present to collide in this new ongoing title? You're definitely getting this, right?
Yes.
I read it. It's a lot of fun. I love the Spawn stuff. It came out, I think two Spawns came out this week, King Spawn 3 and Gunslinger Spawn 1, so both are very good. Next one is another one that I've already read and I highly recommend. It's called Nita Hall's Nightmare Blog, and it's written by our friend Rodney Barnes and art from Jason Sean Alexander and Patrick Reynolds. From the universe of the Eisner-nominated series Killadelphia comes a new terrifying tale and a new terrifying tie-in horror series by acclaimed Marvel writer Rodney Barnes and fan favorite Spawn artist Jason Sean Alexander. Jimmy Sangster might have left Maryland for the vampire-infested city of Killadelphia, but there is still untold evil lurking on the streets of Baltimore. The demon Corsan has surfaced from the underworld to possess a once wronged man, and his vengeance will come at a cost of humanity's despair. But Jimmy's former lover, Nita Halls, a woman with demons of her own, has begun a quest to root out evil in her city. Guided by the ghost of her dead brother, she must come to terms with her own past, lest she join her brother in a state worse than death. This is amazing, this book. I really enjoyed it. The covers are sick, number one. It's dark. It's a mature read. When we did our, comics you should be reading during the pandemic, Rodney Barnes' Killadelphia was on there. Killadelphia is getting a series on some network. They haven't really announced yet. He's working on the Lakers series that's coming out with Bo Burnham and everybody. So Rodney Barnes' name is really hot right now, and he also follows the Active Geek on Instagram, as you should. Let's go to Marvel, and it's one of the only Marvel titles that we have, and it's Phoenix Song Echo, number one, written by Rebecca Roanhorse and with art from Luca Marsasca. Straight out of her transformation in Avengers, Echo gets an exhilarating solo series from the bestseller Rebecca Roanhorse. Against all odds, one of the most powerful entities in the Marvel Universe chooses Maya Lopez, a deaf street fighter, as its new avatar. And the burning question of everyone's mind is why. But Echo is the last person to answer, still learning her new cosmic abilities and struggling with the Phoenix's overwhelming personality. Echo strikes out to return to her roots, but the reservation has even fewer answers. And where power goes, evil follows. Someone wants Echo to fail and unleash a power only the greatest heroes in history have been able to control. Avengers artist Luca Marsasca joins superstar writer Rebecca Roanhorse for a story that will light the entire universe on fire. I can tell you why the Phoenix Force picked Echo, because she's coming to Hawkeye and getting her own series on Disney Plus. That's why. There's your answer, Marvel readers. But if you want to learn a little more about Maya Lopez, who will be showing up in Hawkeye in about a month's time, this is the book to pick up. Let's go to DC. I've got one more. And when we go to DC, Chuck, we go to long, convoluted, hard-to-read stories.
So it's not
Ant. It's not Ant. It should be. I wish all of them were like Ant. I didn't even struggle on that one, but here we go. Catwoman, Lonely City. It's a big book, $7. 10 years ago, the massacre known as Fool's Night claimed the lives of Batman, the Joker, Nightwing, and Commissioner Gordon, and sent Selina Kyle, the Catwoman, to prison. A decade later, Gotham has grown up. It's put away costume heroism and villainy as childish things. The new Gotham is cleaner, safer, and a lot less free. Under the watchful eye of Mayor Harvey Dent and his bat cops, it's into the new city that Selina Kyle returns, a changed woman, with her mind on that one last big score, the secrets hidden inside the Batcave. She doesn't need the money. She just needs to know who is Orpheus. Not Yahya Abdul-Mateen or Lawrence Fishburne. This is Orpheus, not Morpheus. Visionary creator Cliff Chiang from Wonder Woman and Paper Girls writes, draws, colors, and letters the story of a world without Batman, where one woman's wounds threaten to tear apart an entire city. It's an unmissable artistic statement that will change the way you see Gotham's heroes and villains forever. Now, I said we're going to talk a lot about Catwoman. What do you think about this book?
I don't know. I don't think I'm going to pick it up. It sounds different. How's the art? Have you looked at it?
Yeah, the art's pretty cool. Cliff Chiang's a very good artist. I read the book. I don't know where I stand with it as an ongoing series. The story, the premise is good. I'm going to give it my 2 issues, and then I'll make my final decision on it. But they're my picks of the week. Pick them up or not. If you don't, you'll be disappointed. Pick up Ant. It's probably going to get a series somewhere down the line, so pick it up. But Chuck, let's enter spoiler territory.
Yeah.
33 minutes into the podcast as we discuss and break down The Long Halloweens Part 1 and Part 2. So if you haven't read the comic or watched the movies, you might want to stay away from this until you have. Sit down, hunker down, you get 3 hours on a weekend, go to HBO Max, watch these, and enjoy them. And then come back and listen to this part. But if you want to be spoiled, here we go. The Long Halloween is one of my favorite Batman stories. In the sense of, like, when I've read it, it features a lot of my favorite Batman villains, but it also really just breaks down the human aspect of Bruce Wayne, the gray area of the Wayne family. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a deeper dive into the underworld with the Roman and, you know, Falcones and, you know, the Maronis and the mobs. And I thought that that was always very cool. And it introduces you to a new hero, a new villain, Holiday, who is a very cool kind of, you know, serial killer-esque character who only kills on holidays. So I read the book a while ago and I was like, I really, really like this. Then, you know, again, to go back to the beginning of the episode, we got the rumor that Robert Pattinson and Matt Reeves were making The Long Halloween. And I was like, ooh, that's a big movie to embark on, because you need Joker, you need Scarecrow, you need Catwoman, you need Penguin, you need Mad Hatter, you need Two-Face, you need everybody. Poison Ivy, you need literally everybody. And you have to have the mob in there. So when I'm watching this movie, I was like, I'm glad they broke it into two parts, because this is a big steak to chew. But also, I'm watching it, and it's giving me more vibes that Christopher Nolan, took a lot of his imagery in his trilogy from The Long Halloween.
He did. He actually came out and said that after reading The Long Halloween is how he wrote Dark Knight Returns. Now, obviously, it was completely different, but the kind of origin of Harvey is very doesn't mirror it exactly, but you could definitely see that he took bits and pieces of Long Halloween and incorporated it into Harvey Dent's portrayal.
And yeah, I mean, look at just look at The Dark Knight itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have the mob bosses, right, yeah, getting picked off, albeit by Joker. You have that iconic scene that was in, obviously, in The Dark Knight, but was also in this animated part one, where it's all the money, and the Joker lights it on fire. In Long Halloween, Batman and Catwoman and, you know, Dent and just Dent find the money, and they decide to torch it. Mm-hmm. But there's inspiration there. So there was so much inspiration between that. And I never really put it together until I saw this, and I was like, wow, this reminds me of, like, parts of the Nolan trilogy, especially the Harvey Dent stuff.
Yeah.
But they expanded even further on Harvey Dent and gave Two-Face more of what we know from the comics, that, like, when he became Two-Face, Harvey really took a backseat, and it became more of, like, a split personality rather than just an angry version of Harvey Dent.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was much cooler than the Aaron Eckhart Two-Face. So as we move away from movies that came out in the early 2000s and we move into The Long Halloween and what we were talking about right before we jumped on, both of these animated films are sitting at 100% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And 91% for part one and 82% for part two. I want to ask you a few questions. Number one, what did you think of Jensen Ackles as Batman?
I didn't hate it as much as I thought. I'm not a big fan of him. But watching it and listening to him didn't make me think that it was him, if it makes any sense.
No, his voice was amazing. He sounded just like a Batman would sound. Like,
yeah.
He sounded like Kevin Conroy. He sounded like, I can't remember his name, but the guy who played Mace on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
He did a good job. He definitely did a good job.
Yeah, he did. And, like, you know, going into it, I was like, oh, Jensen Ackles. Like, here we go. But no, I thought he did a very good job.
Yeah, I do too. Another thing that kind of sticks out with this is one of Naya Rivera's last roles, if not her last role, after she tragically drowned. She played Catwoman. But what did you think of this story in general? I know it's 3 hours, and we don't have 3 hours to break this down. What did you think of The Long Halloween in its whole?
So I read The Long Halloween last year, and you were like, it's a weird story. And I was like, okay, like, I'll give it a shot, like, and I loved it. You know, it was a great Jeff Loeb story, and I'm sitting there, and then when they announced that they were going to do it, I'm like, shit, like, the original animated stuff that they do, like, the stories that they come up with are good, but when they try to adapt stuff, it never comes out that well. Like, look how high we were on The Killing Joke. We went to the theaters and seen it, and we walked out, and we were like, eh, it was okay. I was super high on Gotham by Gaslight, because that story is amazing, and we got it, and it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that was disappointing.
So, like, when they adapt big storylines and popular storylines, they kind of get muddled, because they change so much. They didn't do this in this one. I thought it was great. The one thing that I was impressed with is the style of art they went with, because it it mirrored the book very well. You know, they didn't try to go too big or too different with the art. They just kind of made it, okay, we're going to give you a flat, you know, you got flat 2D, and we're going to put it in this, you know, quote unquote 3D, because, you know, moving around and pictures and stuff like that. But the art looked great. The story, they changed some things, but they really kept the core story and the core characters in there, which I thought was great. They didn't go too far. Like, sometimes they try too much, and they try, like, oh, we're going to change this and we're going to change that. And they didn't. So I thought the voice cast was cast was great. I think the story was great. I think the art was great. Like, it was probably my favorite DC animated movie.
Wow, I didn't think you were going to say that. I thought you were going to have some issues with this. And I'm glad you didn't, because I actually liked this one a lot, too. I think it didn't get muddled because, you know, WB Animation said, let's do two.
Yeah.
You know,
and they need to with this story. It's a big book.
Absolutely. And it's got a ton of characters in it. Like I said, you know, it's a very human story because you're dealing with a family, obviously the Romans family. You're dealing with issues between Alfred and his father, Albert and his father. You're dealing with issues between Bruce and the ghost of his father, and, like, again, the gray area of him being the Roman's personal doctor and kind of being family with them in a sense. Also, you're dealing with Batman, who has to fight all of his villains. Everybody's out. The Roman hires Poison Ivy, and she takes over Batman. Hires Scarecrow, who looked like one of the puppets from Puppet Master. Hired, who else was in it? He hired Mad Hatter.
Yeah.
You know, like these kind of freaks that were out there. And then you have to deal with, you know, the decline of Harvey Dent and the emergence of Two-Face. You have to deal with Solomon Grundy in Two-Face. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a character duo that, like, shouldn't exist, but it's an awesome duo that exists. And then you have to deal with Holiday, right? So, like, what you're getting is you're getting traditional comics in a sense of you're getting a Bruce Wayne story. You're getting a Batman story. You're getting some of your favorite DC Batman characters. You're getting Halloween, which is great, but you're also getting all of the holidays. And you're getting a detective story.
Yeah.
So, like, this whole story just encapsulates Batman. Like, it just takes everything that makes Batman the number one best-selling superhero of all time and gives it legs, you know, or wings, if you will, in this one, right? Because throughout the whole first movie, Batman is dealing with all of this clusterfuck, honestly, because the Joker's flying around for a cup of coffee, putting out laughing gas. You know, he's got all this stuff with the Roman, and, you know, Catwoman's hot, so he's got to deal with her. And then this hot redhead comes up and takes control of him. All the while, you know, there's a serial killer going on, and Alfred just wants to deliver candy to people. He just wants trick-or-treaters. Like, just give Pennyworth trick-or-treaters. Make his life happy. But then, like, your man on the inside is Calendar Man.
Yeah.
Who is a psychopath who sleeps with calendar dates. So, like, you know that Batman's, like, the cards are stacked up against him. And the whole time, you, as a viewer, or at least I was like, well, who are they going to have as the Holiday? Like, that's how I was when I was reading it, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was like, who's going to play Holiday? Who's going to be this? Even though I know who Holiday is, I'm like, where are they going to go with this? Because, again, they change things.
Yeah.
And I was like, how much are they going to change in this? And I was pleasantly surprised that they didn't change a ton.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about the stories between, you know, the families and stuff. And the biggest story is Gildan Harvey. You know, it really shows Harvey was an asshole. And, you know, he had a loving wife at home and he neglected her. And, you know, he was more worried about saving the city and, you know, doing all this. And, you know, here's this woman at home who is just, she's broken.
Yeah.
And I love that story. And I was really hoping that they didn't change that, like you said, and they didn't.
You could also say the exact same thing for James Gordon. You know, he lets his kids down on Halloween because the Joker is going to murder everybody. You know, if that were somebody who worked at FedEx, maybe an asshole move, right? But police chief, not an asshole move.
But
you got the district attorney who's trying to save the whole city from, you know, a guy who dresses up as a scarecrow, you know, somebody who believes he's from Alice in Wonderland's time. You know, he definitely did neglect Gilda, but sometimes it's the hazards of the job. You kind of get what you sign up for sometimes. You know what I mean? I'm not victim blaming Gilda to run around and become a serial killer. But, you know, she knew that underlining Harvey Dent was Two-Face all along. Like, there was that maniacal, sadistic mm-hmm. version of Harvey that hadn't emerged yet. It hadn't come to a head. So she totally knew what was going on.
Yeah. And, you know, the biggest thing is, for me, like, reading the story and seeing the movie is the twist. Like, I never, ever, ever expected her to be Holiday.
Who did you think was Holiday as you were reading it?
I thought Harvey was too obvious.
Yeah.
So I was...
No, especially, like, if it was Harvey, like, we would have known that.
Yeah.
As, like, Batman fans, like, oh, there was this one time that Two-Face played a character, like, he dressed up as a Holiday character.
So I didn't expect her at all. I was really kind of baffled of where they were going with it, because the story is great. It really mm-hmm. is. It's weird, and it's long, and it's very complex. It's probably one of the most complex stories I've ever read. But at the end, it makes sense. It just, you know, you're kind of a detective reading it, and at the end when they do all this, you put all the clues together and be like, oh, okay, like, you know, you put this together and that together, and then in the end it makes sense. So even though it's a long book, it's satisfying, and the movie mirrored the book pretty well. So at the end, and like you said, I was afraid they were going to change that, and to me, that's the biggest part, like, to find out that she is Holiday and she was going around killing, especially because of her connection to Falcone. And I was like, okay, I'm happy with this.
Yeah, and the fact that Batman lets her go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, is Holiday done? And she's like, no, Holiday's finished. So, like, the fact that he let her go kind of, like, strengthens the argument that Batman is a forgiving hero, right? Mm-hmm. And if had he had that killer's edge, Gotham wouldn't be as bad. You know what I mean? Like, as we see, like, all these stories with Batman, and like it's the pseudo Batman stories where they're like, Batman's to blame for the Joker, for all these costume heroes. If he would just kill the Joker, they, like, the little villains would kind of just go back into their caves. But Batman always takes the Joker to Arkham, and he always breaks out, and then he always takes in the Arkham, and he breaks out again. Had he killed the Joker, it would be game over. And he does this too. Like, there's a serial killer who has killed, thinking Holidays, you know, there's multiple Holidays, has killed multiple people, and he's just like, all right, just burn your stuff and carry on being a housewife. So, you know, Batman at times becomes more Bruce Wayne than Batman. Mm-hmm. And it's a human thing. It definitely is a human thing, because, you know, you look at Holiday, and Holiday only killed criminals. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Except for Sophia. I don't know if she was much of a criminal. Although, definitely it doesn't look like what Gotham casted Sophia to look like.
No.
They made Sophia gorgeous, and they made this one, like, you know, Salman Grandi's wife.
Yeah. Very tall, and
she was a powerhouse.
Yeah. Oh, she was a beast. And like I said, with the art and stuff, like, they mirrored that greatly. So I was happy.
Yeah. Overall, I was very delighted with this. I actually gave it like an 8.5 on the Geek Grader. What did you give it?
I went a little higher. I went 8.9.
Okay, so we're right around the same mark. You're almost in, like, excellent territory. But I grade my animated films a little bit different than I grade my, you know, live action films, because there's a little less, you know, stringency. Like, you can go a little further. I will ask you one question. I'm wondering if you caught this, and maybe some of our listeners who watch this may have or may not have. Did you see any of the secret scenes?
No.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so pumped that you didn't. So the first one kind of leads you into the second one, where Bruce is meeting with the Roman, and there's a woman who has a green hat on all the way with her head down. And he says, they have this little banter between, you know, frenemies, I guess we can mm-hmm. use. And the Roman goes, I don't think I've introduced you to my new like girlfriend or my new companion. And Bruce shakes her hand and says, lovely, lovely to meet you. And the vines come out. And it's Poison Ivy.
Well, it makes sense, especially how the second one started.
Yeah. Now, the second one, there's, you know, Alfred finally gets the trick-or-treaters.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I remember that.
Little boy comes up and,
dressed
you know,
as Batman.
He's dressed as Batman. He gets this stuff. So I fast forward it, and there's another ring on the doorbell. And Alfred opens up the door, and it's Barry Allen and Oliver Queen in their costumes. And he turns, and he goes, Master Bruce, this one's for you. And it goes credits.
Oh.
Yeah, it was so awesome. So awesome.
I'm going to have to just watch that now.
Yeah, I mean, like, who would have thought, like, these movie companies, I guess, these, you know, these directors are like, let's put secret scenes in it. And they're confusing the hell out of me because now I'm, like, thinking, like, oh, does James Bond have a end credit scene? Like, I want to know if everything has an end credit scene now. And now I got to worry about animated movies now with end credit scenes. But well played, DC. Well played, Warner Brother animation. But this was a good one. I suggest that people read the book first.
Yeah. Yeah. The book is so good. And it's long. Like, I bought the
trade?
Yeah, I bought the trade. Because I wasn't buying, you know, what is it, like 6 or 7 different books?
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
I definitely recommend it. It's one of my favorite Batman stories.
Yeah, and also one of mine as well, but also a little preview into our upcoming episode that comes out this upcoming Wednesday. One of my picks of the week is the Long Halloween special that DC is releasing this upcoming Wednesday. So they're doing their due diligence and keeping everything kind of relevant and revolving around each other. So look out for that. And speaking of our next episode, we're going to review Dune because it's out. It's on HBO Max. It came out early. It came out Thursday at 6 o'clock. I'm so excited to talk about this. I have yet to see it at this moment, but I plan on seeing it at some point this weekend. And I cannot wait to talk about it. So look for that. Follow us on social media, The Active Geek. We'll follow Galaxy Wars and Cage My IQ. And for The Active Geek podcast, I'm Jim.
I am Chuck.
And we are out.